Time to look at starting pitchers. It is Tuesday, March 3rd, and also starting pitching machines we'll be talking about. Adam Azer, Al Melchior, and Scott White on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. What's up, fellas?
Ready to talk about some pitchers. That's what's up.
Yeah. And Scott, are you ready too, or just me and Al? Or?
I got used to being in the room with you. Now I'm talking to a machine again, an infernal machine named Double A.
It's like Chris Young. With machines.
Oh, Chris Young knows a thing or two about machines, sure.
More on that in just a little bit. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And no emails in this show, but we'll try to get to some later on in the week. This is part one of our starting pitcher preview. We'll do it like we did outfielders. I'm looking at maybe the first six rounds of picks in our head-to-head points league, and we'll go through a bunch of pitchers there. Tweet of the day comes from Jay Eddy. At what point in the starting pitcher rankings do you start to worry if you haven't grabbed your first starter?
Approximately number 15. Well, actually, exactly number 15.
I think that's who? Who's that for you?
I think that's Lester.
It's Lester for you. It's Harvey for me.
No, it's Hamels for you, Al. Lester's 11 for you.
Well, so you're not worried yet. I mean, you still got Darvish, Samardzija, Wainwright before you get number 15 one. I don't know how comfortable you feel about taking Wainwright, but we can get to that a little later. It's actually not quite that early for me when I start to worry, because that around the 15 spot is where you know, close to the end of the elite there, which, you know, usually I'll take one of those guys in round three just because it makes sense according to the tiers. But when I start to worry, actually, is when the next tier is starting to run out. That's the Jordan Zimmermann, Jake Arrieta, Carlos Carrasco tier. Right? I actually want to make sure I at least have two starting pitchers by that point. But if the first and second both come at that point, it's not that big of a deal to me. That's around 21. So I guess that's pretty close.
Ooh, boy, do I disagree with you guys on this one.
Uh-oh.
So to me, you've convinced me to take Hamels out of this group because you're right about the whole wins thing. He could have a really bad win total unless he gets traded early.
He's so, in that group for me.
What'd you say?
He's in that
I know. You've convinced me that he's not necessarily a true
ace. So you're
ace.
The downer on Hamels.
No. I just don't go as far into the rankings as you guys do when answering this question. So okay. For me, there are 10 guys, and it's not necessarily a rankings dispute. It's a philosophy dispute. You know, I really want to have an ace, and I don't think there are 15 aces because I don't know that you could include John Lester in there. Based on last year, sure, John Lester was an ace, but the three previous years, he wasn't even close. So why are we thinking that he's just going to be like he was in 2014? And then Wainwright, absolutely not. And Hamels, I'd have to say no, just because, you know, he's great every year. He's got an ERA 3.06 or better for the last 5 years, I think. But he might win six games, and that's not going to be a top 10 pitcher. So I think there were 10 guys for me, and I'll name them based on your rankings. Kershaw, Felix, Sale, Price, Scherzer, Kluber, Cueto, Strasburg, Bumgarner, Darvish. Basically, Scott's top 10 and pretty close to Al's top 10. That's who I'm looking at as a guy I really want to have.
So you're absolutely taking a pitcher of one of your first three picks then.
Three or four.
That's
if I have an early pick in the
first. It'll be three.
Yes.
I mean, none of those guys are going. Maybe Darvish, but I'm not sure if you're really... you know, if you're really going for security there, I'm not sure Darvish really longs because he's coming off a bad elbow at the end of last season. That's a little concerning.
Okay, then you could convince me that it's nine. But yes, you're right. I am taking a starting pitcher with one of my first three-round picks, one of my first three picks. And I thought that was kind of a philosophy for both of you to have at least one true ace. Now, Al, it seems like you have more true aces in mind than I do. And Scott, it seems like if you don't get a true ace, you're okay getting two really good number twos.
Well, kind of what I was getting into at the start was that having now broken down my tiers and, you know, kind of matched them up with some of our mock drafts and the kinds of players going off the boards at certain points. Usually in round three, it makes sense to take an ace because all the the elite players are gone at every other position, and that's really the last position where there's any elite players remaining. So it just makes sense to take somebody, whether it's Kluber or Cueto or Strasburg or Bumgarner, one of those pitchers.
Right.
But if there was a scenario where for some reason one of my elite in another position, like Yasiel Puig or Victor Martinez with the knee injury, I've seen him slipping to the third round and beyond. If one of them is available at that point, I think I'd be willing to chance it, to pass up the starting pitcher there, hoping maybe one will still get back to me in round four. And if not, knowing there's still plenty of high upside players like Harvey and Lester and Greinke who are going to be available probably through about round five for sure, maybe even round six, and definitely make a priority of getting two with my next three picks there in round four, five, and six.
So, Al, do you want to comment on that, you know, expanding on tweet of the day and what I was saying and what you were saying?
Well, yeah, I don't really disagree too much with what Scott says. I think I get a little bit more nervous when I do get beyond the top 15 and I'm relying on I'll say Harvey as an example just because of the risk of coming off of Tommy John surgery, although he very well could be like a top 10 starter this year. But yeah, just what Scott was saying, that you get past round three and you've got a better alternative among your hitters to take instead of whomever it is, Lester, Bumgarner, Cueto. That's why I've expanded it out to 15, and I am okay with getting Hamels or Samardzija. Wainwright is the one that makes me nervous out of this group. I think realistically, I'm not taking Wainwright in the first four or five rounds, and so I may need to adjust.
Can we talk about Samardzija? This guy is extremely inconsistent throughout his career. And a little homer prone, I would say. And now he's pitching for the White Sox. I'm not buying him repeating what he did last year. How about you guys? He had a 2.99 ERA, 1.07 WHIP. But last three seasons, his ERAs are 3.81, 4.34, and then 2.99 last year. What do you think about Samardzija?
Samardzija this year, I think he's on the verge of becoming an ace, and I would be okay with him as my number one or two, depending on how early I'm able to take another starting pitcher, because really the big improvement he made last year was walk rate. He was one of the best pitchers in all of baseball last year. And usually once a pitcher figures that out, he doesn't then regress. So I think the breakthrough was absolutely legitimate. And you know, he's going to give you an ace workload.
Let's talk about some picks we liked and picks we didn't like in our mock drafts, either the head-to-head points or the rotisserie drafts. Do you guys have any that you liked?
Sure. A couple stood out. All right. You want me to just go with number one here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I think you'll like this. Like
Phil Hughes?
Gio Gonzalez in the 13th round in our roto draft.
Okay. Did I make that pick?
I'm sure you did. What?
Oh, you're damn straight I did.
Yeah.
Why do you like it?
Special, and I know you like Gio better than I do, but that was... I think I had time to snag him.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's steady. I feel like safe bet to be around a top 30 pitcher, a guy you're going to start more often than not. So getting a guy like that in the 13th round is pretty good.
Especially in a roto draft, too. I actually got a Twitter question this morning about the impact of quality starts replacing wins in a categories league. And I'm of the opinion that really affects a pretty small number of pitchers. I mean, you can't predict wins well. You can, you know, lean towards the pitchers on teams with better offenses, but it's still pretty inconsistent. But somebody like Gio, who's not very efficient, I would be a little less high on that pick if this were a points league where quality starts mattered. But I think in a roto league, it's really good value.
Okay, anything else you liked, Al?
Yeah, and this one, not so much because it's great value, because I think it was sort of a bold pick that I think will wind up paying off, and that's Mike Fiers in the 14th round. Because I think there's still some question about which, in fact, there's a blog post in our Fantasy Dilemmas, plug, on will the real Mike Fiers stand up? And he could be very consistent, but aside from 2013, which was just a different difficult year for him personally. In the minors and the majors, he's been a guy who, despite limited velocity, gets you strikeouts, doesn't walk a lot of guys. Homers are the one Achilles heel, but with a 14th round pick, you know, you can deal with the occasional hit to your ERA.
Scott White, picks you like?
Yeah, well, I would include Fiers in a group of four pitchers that, you know, it's not like there was an oddball pick in either of these drafts that just was like, wow, that one guy in this one draft is great value. It's just these guys seem to be, in general, going for a lot later than I think they're worth, and it includes Fiers and includes Matt Shoemaker, who went in round 12 and 13 in head-to-head and roto respectively, Colin McHugh, who went in round 11 and 13, and the one I want to focus on is Garrett Richards, who went in rounds 13 and 15 in head-to-head and roto. And that's insane, because he was an ace for, what was it, almost 80% of last season before he messed up his knee late in the year. And there was some concern early on that maybe he'd miss a month or two at the beginning of the year, but that's really been put to rest now. They've said he's probably not going to be ready for opening day, but they're thinking now 2 weeks. He'll miss the first couple weeks of the season and then be back in the rotation. He's making great progress. So to get, especially since we're talking about, okay, the way pitching compares to hitting these days, you really want to make sure you get an ace or two. To get one in round 13 or 14, 15, wherever it is going to be the kind of pick that wins you a league.
So how about some picks you guys did not like? And I just want to remind everyone, we're going to mostly focus on the top six, the first six rounds of starting pitchers that went in our points leagues, but we'll have another podcast tomorrow with more starting pitchers, and we will talk more in depth about some of these mid-round and late-round guys. Okay, picks you didn't like. Al?
Okay, well, the two that stood out for me are two guys who are basically bust candidates. I mean, I've talked a lot about Sonny Gray in previous podcasts, and I don't think I necessarily need to belabor it. He went in the eighth round in our roto draft, and yeah, based on what he did last year, that would be an appropriate place to take him, but that's not going to be me. I just see way too much bust potential here, despite the fact that he's at an age where it seems like he'd be taking steps forward rather than backward. And Greinke in round four, I also think is too early, but again, relative just to Scott here, I'm not sure about the industry as a whole. I've got him 27th. I'm sure that probably in the industry puts me on the low end. And based on where Scott's got him, again, round four would probably be appropriate, but Greinke's been inconsistent over years. I'm never quite sure which version we're going to get. And I think this is a year where it just seems like he's due for a little bit of regression.
Scott, you cool with Greinke? Because I don't know why I fear him. I think it's because his stuff isn't really as electric as it used to be, but he still finds a way to be really productive. Two straight years with the Dodgers with a 2.71 ERA or better. Last year he had 207 strikeouts and 202 innings. In 2013, he wasn't striking out that many guys, but he still looks like a pretty good pitcher. Scott, what do you think about
Greinke? Yeah, I'm cool with Greinke. I had my concerns last year because of the inconsistencies, and at that point, it wasn't even really inconsistency. It was a steady regression in strikeout rate that made me think, okay, maybe this guy isn't the pitcher his ERA makes him look like. But then, you know, not only did he deliver the low ERA against year, but he got that strikeout rate back up. The walk rate was a career best. And so, you know, maybe he doesn't quite reach those heights this year, but considering we were still thinking of him as a top 15 starting pitcher even before last year, I don't know why there's any reason to change it coming off last year.
So, Al, would you take, let's say, Cole Hamels? Well, you definitely would take Cole Hamels over Greinke. Would you take Jake Arrieta over Greinke?
Yeah, I actually have Arrieta just two spots behind Hamels. So
okay. Scott, would you take Arrieta over Greinke?
I would not, but they're in the same tier. I mean, I'd be happy with either one of them.
Scott, tell me some draft picks you did not like.
Okay, so I'll give you...
Don't pick any of mine this time.
I don't think any of these are yours. In the head-to-head league specifically, Jose Quintana went round 8.
Ooh, whoa.
Which, you know, compare that to the Roto draft. He went in round 17. But the thing is, I've seen this in some of my drafts with people around the industry. That people seem to be really high on Jose Quintana this year. And I'm not really sure why. I think he's a good pitcher. But round 8, to put it in perspective, it's right after Tyson Ross went. It was still Phil Hughes, Hyunjin Ryu, Jared Weaver, Gio Gonzalez, all of them still on the board. And I just don't think Quintana has the same upside. Look, last year was as good as it gets strikeout-wise. It was 8 per 9. It was good. He's only going to go down from there. He's not going to go up. And I think he probably has more in common with, when you weigh upside versus consistency, he probably has more in common with the Chris Archer, Zach Wheeler class of starting pitcher than the group of names I just rattled off there.
I think Quintana's sort of the new Kuroda, you know, that he's good. If you have him, you probably start him most weeks. But there's a lot of pitchers in that class, and I think he can be replaced and isn't worth that high of a pick.
Scott, anything else you want to highlight?
Yeah, just Danny Salazar went in round 15 in both leagues, which doesn't sound like a particularly high pick. I would normally say a pitcher with Salazar's upside, any player with Salazar's upside, is worth a late pick just to see if he comes through. But round 15, that's where Garrett Richards went in one of these drafts. There's still, it's such a deep position. There are still enough high upside options that you can count on making regular starts and being a consistent part of your pitching staff all season. Go with a guy who isn't even guaranteed a job going into the year. And even if he does win the job, he still has some big questions to answer about endurance and efficiency, throwing strikes consistently, all of the problems he had last year. So I think that's too early to gamble on the upside, again, particularly for a player who doesn't have a clear starting spot yet.
Would you go Salazar or Chris Tillman?
I would go Tillman.
I'd go Tillman too.
Salazar or Matt Cain?
I'll go Cain.
I'm going Salazar.
Salazar or Drew Smiley?
Smiley.
Salazar.
Really?
No, not really.
what am I missing about Drew Smiley? Because go ahead.
I was going to say I have Smiley 3 spots ahead. I knew I had them close.
Oh, so you were serious when you said not really.
Yeah, no, I was serious.
Oh, okay.
But then my eye caught where Smiley was. I was like, scanning my rankings to see where I had them because I knew it was close. And at first, I didn't see Smiley.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm missing with Smiley. I mean, I know he's not going to have a 170 ERA, but when he went to the Rays, he was incredible. He had a 3-1 record with a 170 ERA and 7 starts, 47 and 2/3 innings. He had 44 strikeouts, only 11 walks. So I feel like the Rays are an organization that gets the most out of their pitchers, and I guess I'll just go back to Scott's Yasmani Grandal argument. Andrew Friedman traded for this guy, really liked him. That was when he was with the Rays. Now he's obviously with the Dodgers. Friedman, that is. So I feel like Smiley, he went in round 15 or 16 or something like that in that draft. He went after Salazar. Yeah, he went around 16. I really like him. I'm targeting him. Do you guys think that's a good guy to target?
Well, you have David, and I'm sorry if I get the pronunciation wrong here, David Schoenfield of ESPN.com. He wrote a blog recently calling Drew Smiley a sleeper Cy Young candidate. And I feel like since that came out, I've seen Smiley go much earlier in drafts. And I guess his observation was that Smiley started throwing a bunch of high fastballs when he got to the Rays, which normally isn't usually considered a good idea because they're more likely to lead to home runs than low fastballs. But they're also leading to fly balls in general, and you're getting outs that way, even at a higher rate than you are on ground balls. So as long as it stays in the park, that was his basic argument. I think it's kind of reaching, if I'm going to be perfectly honest.
I think if he's going to make that argument about Smiley, you're close to making that argument for Odorizzi.
Except Odorizzi, well, I guess Smiley's strikeout rate went up with the Rays too, but Odorizzi had a terrific strikeout rate all year.
And they both have control issues. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young, but I do like what I saw from him.
Yeah, no. Joe Kelly's going to win the AL Cy Young.
Oh, okay. All right, well, more on those guys on another podcast. Let's run through some injuries, news, and notes really quickly. Scott mentioned the note on Garrett Richards. Won't be ready for opening day, but maybe mid-April. Addison Reed is on track to be ready for opening day. He's dealing with shoulder soreness. Relief pitcher preview coming later this week. You guys think Addison Reed is going to keep his job this year?
Yeah, I think so, but I think he's more vulnerable than now than he's been the last couple of years. I mean, Ziegler's in there. If Reed's not ready, Ziegler, who of course is dealing with his own knee issue, may not be ready, but he's at least down the line a threat. And there's another guy in the Arizona bullpen, Evan Marshall, and I'm laughing at myself because I lost his name temporarily. But I think he's kind of a sneaky closer in waiting type.
How about Melvin Upton, formerly BJ Upton? He could be out close to 2 months with inflammation in his left foot. So that bothers me because I really like Julio Teheran, but he's going to win 3 games this year.
Yeah, I know. As a Braves fan, it's strange that I've gotten to a point where I see Melvin or BJ, whatever you want to call him, going down. And that's bad news.
Yeah.
But there's really nothing good in that lineup, and at least he has that slim chance of being halfway decent.
Pittsburgh first baseman Corey Hart injured his foot in a hot tub, and he needed stitches, which was a weird injury. But Michael Saunders, had the sprinkler injury last week. So at first we thought he was going to be out for half the season. Now he could be back in April. So all that Dalton Pompey stuff, is that actually, is he unaffected? What's going on with the Blue Jays outfield? Let me just ask you that.
I think Pompey is pretty much unaffected because the thing that came out in reports that I saw after the Saunders injury was, which I didn't see as much of before, it was reporters saying that Pompey pretty much had the center field job won. That was sort of a nominal battle. So
okay.
I don't expect Pompey's playing time to be affected, but not good news for Pilar. And probably not good news for Diane Vecieto. And Dave Brown, our blogger, he came up with a great nickname. If Vecieto does get to play and he hits some home runs, did you see that?
No.
Jack and Diane.
I like that. That's good.
Hey,
speaking of Dave Brown, do you know which NFL team Dave Brown played for?
Well, the Giants, of course.
Oh, yeah, I'm surprised you remembered.
Also the Cardinals, for what it's worth.
Yeah. He wasn't very good.
No, he was not.
Speaking as a Giants fan. So Michael Saunders, mixed league relevant or just AL only?
A deeper mixed league to completely sidestep your question.
Fair enough. And outfielder Chris Young of the Yankees struck out against a pitching machine yesterday. That was on Monday. Oh, and spring training starts today, doesn't it?
Yeah, exhibitions, yes.
Oh, awesome. That's great. Good stuff.
That was the Kershaw model pitching machine, by the way.
Oh, okay. It was throwing like a slider.
Yeah.
This is like a precursor to the day when players are replaced by machines. We realize this, right? We're just kind of throwing it in there as a side item, but this is Terminator-type stuff.
Fantasy's going to be very different in those days.
Yes.
Let's do some starting pitcher questions, and then we'll go through. Then we have the legitometer or the legitometer to break out.
Oh,
and the mock draft review. Starting pitcher questions. It's a deep position. I don't even have to ask you. So, what is your overall starting pitcher strategy? We touched on, when to take your first starting pitcher, but overall strategy, Al, you can kick it off.
Yeah, generally, of course, we talked about when to pursue the number one starter, and Scott also talked a little bit about getting the second guy. I really need to have my top three starters by the end of the 10th round in a 12-team league, or it's just not going to go well. So, and then after that, I'm waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, because once you get through the top 30, 40 starters, we talked about Quintana. I think he's a great example of the type of pitcher that you find there, and there's not a lot that separates him from dozens of other pitchers that you can get anywhere from the 11th to probably the 15th or 16th round, if not later.
I actually would go a little more aggressively early. I'd particularly if we're talking a head-to-head league, Roto might be a little different. But in head-to-head, if you can get all five or at least four of your starting pitchers from the top 40 or so, that's I'm basically referring to the top three tiers, but since I can't show you my tiers right now, it comes out to about the top 40 in the starting pitcher rankings. Ideally, I'd have five there, but if it's four, I can live with that, because the thing is, I feel like we reached a point last year, it was most apparent to me of all, but we've been kind of slowly building up to it since the end of the steroids era. Yeah, there is a lot of breakout potential among starting pitchers late, and you should take advantage of that, but you can't afford to I guess what I'm trying to say is
you can't afford to.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. No, you can't afford to be figuring that out on the fly, because everybody else's starting rotation is going to be so good that if you're still trying to, if you're going by trial and error to fill out the last two or three spots of your starting five, you're going to get left behind really quickly and you may not be able to catch up.
Okay. Now, one thing I want to point out is that starting pitching depth is usually pretty good on the waiver wire. So that's just something to keep in mind. Your starting rotation at the end of the season is going to look a lot different than it did at the beginning of the season.
But maybe not. I think we're moving away from that because there's so many good, reliable pitchers now.
But you know what's gonna happen.
Those guys are going to have three or more.
Yeah, but still, you're going to pick up the Jake Arrietas, the Carlos Carrascos, and, you know, you're...
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe somebody beats you to it. Maybe by the time that happens, you're already 0-4 or whatever.
I think it's going to be a lot less predictable than you're making it out to be because it's baseball. These guys are going to get hurt and crazy things are going to happen.
Well, I was going to say what could be less predictable is, I think I've certainly said that the pitching landscape, it's gotten a lot deeper, and you look at last year where all these relative unknowns emerged and were very good. That won't necessarily happen this year.
Right.
So, I mean, Scott does have a point. I mean, even though I think I'd be more inclined to fill out my last two spots later, that could wind up burning me if we don't have a scenario like last year where we have a bunch of upside guys or even unknown guys that emerge.
I think the unknown guys always emerge just because there's so many players. It's what I'm noticing is there's less and less of the top guys out. Or maybe it's not so much that there's fewer falling out as there's many falling out among hitters now. And I don't know if it's related to the whole banned substances thing. And, you know, we talk about steroids with theirs most often, but there's plenty of substances on the banned substance list that aren't steroids that may have helped players play through injuries and still perform at a high level in the past. I'm not talking about major injuries. I'm talking about nagging stuff that piles up over 162-game season. You know, how many players have we talked about, Jason Kipnis, Evan Longoria, who just stunk last year, and we don't really know why. And I don't feel like that used to happen as often as it's happening now. Those were just two examples, but there's been plenty in the last two or three years of hitters like that that you used to draft hitters in the early rounds because those were relatively safe. But now I don't think there's that clear divide anymore. Among the elite pitchers, I think it's 11 that I tiered as elite or higher, there's only two newcomers to that group from last year, Corey Kluber and Johnny Cueto. And it's not like either of them came out of nowhere. They were still highly regarded fantasy pitchers prior to last year.
That's a stretch for Kluber. Cueto,
he was
certainly
a top 40 guy going into last year, Kluber.
I felt like I did have him there, and I felt like I was kind of on the outside.
Yeah, I thought you were kind of crazy about Corey Kluber.
I'm just nitpicking, but I think Kluber's just a good example of one of the many pitchers that it was not out of nowhere like DeGrom or McHugh, but was not on a lot of people's radar for the top 40. I don't think.
Look, I'm not making the case that you can completely punt starting pitching and make your staff based off the waiver wire. I'm just
I used to do that. That used to be what I do, and it worked because you'd make do with third or fourth tier guys, the Chris Tillmans of the world, until you found something better. But now, if you're going with that kind of pitching staff at the beginning of the season, you could count on that in the past because there wasn't really enough high end pitchers for you to get left in the dust while you were making do with those middle of the road guys. But now there is. Now everybody, if you're the guy passing on pitching, everybody else is going to have two or three aces or something very close to it, and it's going to be hard to compete.
Okay, then let's move on here, and I'll ask you, how does your strategy change in a roto league compared to a points league?
Well, I have a lot more urgency to fill those mid-rotation spots because of the larger pitching staff.
In head-to-head?
In roto.
Larger?
Okay. Usually you're starting six in roto and five in points.
Minimum six, sometimes seven.
Well, I usually think of head-to-head as the bigger pitching staff because two start guys are more of a priority. But I get what you're saying now.
Bigger pitching staff as a whole, but fewer starters. Fewer guys that you're starting per week.
Generally, yeah. And I mean, Scott makes a good point. A number of teams are going to wind up with at least one SPARP. So, you could have seven starters in your head-to-head staff, and certainly you could have six. But you also could have five. So that difference of possibly one or two extra spots for starters in a roto league, that's going to make me want, particularly for the number four, number five spots, get on that a little more quickly.
Scott, how does your strategy change in an auction league?
Well, can I not answer the head-to-head?
No, because we're running out of time.
Okay. I actually think it's just the opposite there. But, in an auction league, usually I think of roto leagues when I think of auction leagues, and since I'm not emphasizing starting pitching as much, and since we talked before a little about how, there's so few truly elite hitters. You're talking about basically the first three rounds that when I have an opportunity to get more than just three of those guys, which you do in an auction, I take it. Well, that's me investing so much money in hitter that I don't have that much left in pitching. And because it's a roto league and because you don't have to worry about banking those early failures, I'm more willing to kind of build my pitching staff on the fly with lower dollar guys in an auction format.
12-team roto league, $260 budget. How much did Clayton Kershaw go for?
I have him at 36.
And I've got him, I just overshot it there. I want to say 37, but I'm just guessing at this point.
I think it's 35.
35.
Yeah.
All right, by comparison, how much should Johnny Cueto go for? So we're talking about the difference between the number one guy, Kershaw, and one of that next group in Cueto.
This is where Scott and I have a big difference because I've got Cueto ranked eighth. Scott has him seventh. I've got him at $19. Scott's got him at $26. And it does kind of speak to, I think, the difference in our strategies because when you get down to, say, numbers like 40 through 70, I think there's about $5 that separate 40 from 70 in my rankings. So I've distributed a lot of the money in that portion. And, I do see a drop-off from the top, really the top two. I've got Kershaw on sale pretty well ahead of everybody.
I can't believe I skipped the sale news. I'm sorry. You still have Sale that far ahead of everybody? He might not be ready for opening day.
I built in him missing a couple of starts when I did projections. So he's kind of, unless he has arm trouble or something or a setback, he's kind of right where I saw him anyway. And even with the built-in time missed, I still have him for $27.
All right, Scott, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Al talked about how between 40 and 70 or whatever, there's not a lot of variation at starting pitcher. That's kind of why I think it's that's why the elite guys stand out more, and I guess that's why I have them going for more money. I think that's something that's often overlooked in roto leagues because I mean, what are the main ways elite starting pitchers are distinguishing themselves from everybody else? It's strikeouts and it's whip. So you can count on those guys for a high strikeout total and a low whip. You can't necessarily count on that same combination from really anyone else in the starting pitcher pool. So I think they're worth the extra dollar. I won't be spending that extra dollar myself because, as I already laid out, I'm spending all my money on hitting. But if you're more inclined to go the pitching route, I think it's worth it.
Last question. How does the starting pitcher position change in AL only or NL only?
I think not a lot, but as you would probably expect, there's the top ranks of pitchers, not the very, very top, but you know, top like 30 or so, a little heavier on the NL guys. Their stats will be a little better, but it doesn't have a big impact on how I draft in the single league formats.
Time for the legitometer. Do you prefer legitometer or legitometer?
Legitometer.
Scott?
You know, I think I prefer legitometer because it emphasizes the legit a little more. But you know, it's not my product to name.
Well, if it helps, I actually am looking at the notes now, and I spelled it L-E-G-I-T-O-M-E-R. So it's the legitimer. So let's.
I don't like that at all.
Let's go to the legitimer here. I got five guys who had really good seasons. Scale of 0 to 10. 0 being it's never going to happen again. 10 being totally legit. Going to repeat. Corey Kluber on the legitimer.
9.
Yeah, 9 sounds good to me. And really, the big concern for me is just that is he going to pitch that many innings again?
How many did he pitch? He pitched 235 2/3. Yeah, but he does. Yeah, but he could be great with 220, whatever. Okay, Carlos Carrasco.
I'll go 7 here, and probably the lowest I'm going to go on any of these guys. And I still am drafting him pretty much as if I'm viewing him as a 9. But yeah, we're talking about less than half a season in the rotation where he was great. But I really do think that that was a legitimate breakout.
Yeah, I think so too, just because the rates, both the strikeout and walk rate, were off the charts. But it is making a lot of a very short sample of starts there. So I'm kind of inching up to 8, I think, with Carrasco. But I think 7, just to give him some distinction from the rest of this group, I'm going to go 7 also.
Jacob DeGrom.
Because he's an 8.
I'll give him an 8, too. Yeah, yeah. I don't have too much doubt. If you go back and look at the minor league numbers, you know, and you give him a break for when he came back from Tommy John, there was some promise there, I think, that went overlooked.
Jake Arrieta.
You know, I can't quite go 10 on him, but it's pretty close. 9, I'll say. He didn't actually have enough innings to qualify, but if he did, he would have had the second best FIP to Clayton Kershaw. And I mean, the strikeout and walks rates, you can't really dispute those. Maybe the home run rate was a little too good to be true because he gave up 5 home runs all year. But the thing is, he's not going to be a pitcher who gives up a lot of home runs. So I think it was just a guy who, you know, we all knew he had the potential to be good for a long time, and we'd kind of given up on it, but obviously he figured things out.
I'll go 8 instead of 9 on Arrieta. It certainly looked like it was a breakout year where he did a lot of things that he had shown he had the capability to do earlier. But you know, whereas Kluber had great peripherals before, and just the results weren't good. I mean, Arrieta had some pretty lousy peripherals prior to last year, so at least at times. You know, 8 is still, you know, a pretty high degree of legitimacy.
Phil Hughes.
11.
No.
Mine goes to 11.
Come on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go 8 here, and not for really any scientific reasons. And again, as I was saying with Arrieta, 8, we're still talking high. We're still talking, I pretty much 100% believe in him. But I don't know, just because he's Phil Hughes, I feel like, and because the home run thing, is what really gets me. Like, his home run rate cut in half. Those were killing him in New York. And I know it was a better park in Minnesota, but I just feel like maybe that's a little too good to be true. I mean, if you just look at the ratios otherwise, he set a record for strikeout to walk ratio. His FIP was like a whole run lower than his ERA, so you could actually argue he had bad luck last year.
Oh, Scott,
I think with his history, I want to see a little more.
You want the weirdest thing about Phil Hughes?
Sure.
So you mentioned the home run rate cut in half, 0.7 home runs per nine.
Yep.
He was actually a lot worse at home. He had a 4.25 ERA at home and gave up 11 of his 16 home runs at home. So if you believe in Phil Hughes, he might be even better than he was last year if he can just pitch better at home.
Yeah.
That's why he's an 11.
I mean, there's a point to be made there. I just, where do you have him ranked? I'm not sure we're that far apart on where he's ranked. I have him 29th.
Yeah, I was thinking, 19th. I was going to say I thought 18th, but I'm looking at Roto rankings. I don't know if I've got him anywhere different.
Yeah.
In points.
But. I mean, that's a noticeable gap, but, you know, a lot of the pitchers in between him, like I have Sonny Gray, who I know you don't like, James Shields, I could go lower on him, Tyson Ross. It's a lot of unproven guys in between.
You know, when you said, well, you know, but he's Phil Hughes, for some weird reason, where my mind went was I thought of that Pete Rose commercial where he's standing in the hall. And he's not supposed to be in the hall. Like, wouldn't it be great to have like a commercial with Phil Hughes where he's at home and his wife is just berating him? It's like, are you sure you took out the garbage? Because, you know, you're Phil Hughes.
If that okay, just that's all right, Al. That's all right.
It's a rough draft.
Here's the thing, Al has a lot of guts. He comes up with these weird, really weird jokes, and he'll say them. And I think that's great. Good for you. Good for you. And you know what I learned? If you laugh at your own jokes, then people will think it's funny no matter what, or they'll enjoy themselves just hearing someone laugh. So.
That's a good pro tip.
This is like a polite dressing down of Al's humor.
Oh, it absolutely was.
Yeah.
I actually think Al is funny. I just think sometimes, on the podcast he strikes out against the pitching machine. That's all. But you know, but he tries. At least he went up against the pitching machine.
That's all.
All right, let's
push Young deep down.
Yes, there you go. Let's do the mock draft review. Points draft. Clayton Kershaw. We're going to start with him. He went number 5 overall. He was one of 2 pitchers to go in the first round. One of 3 pitchers to go in the first 13 picks of a 12-team league. So, Clayton Kershaw, number 5 overall. Where would you guys take Clayton Kershaw? I'm going to name some names. You tell me if you take what you tell me where Kershaw, you know, should be. Trout, McCutchen, Stanton, Goldschmidt. Let me just make sure I'm getting the names right after that. Miguel Cabrera, Jose Abreu.
Did we miss somebody?
Yeah, I think I did. I'm going to start over. Ready?
Okay.
Forget that happened. Trout, Stanton, Cabrera, McCutchen, Goldschmidt.
Okay, now's when I take him.
Right for Abreu?
Yes.
For me too, yeah.
And I could see him going as high as 2nd in a points league. I want to be the one to do it, but I think 6 after all the hitters who I think could contend for number 1 overall honors. That's when I take him.
Same in Roto?
Yeah, same in Roto. I've got him 6th. This is why I want to pick 5th. Because I don't know that I really want to take Kershaw 6th. If I'm looking at, you know, not picking again until 18.
Yeah.
And I've got a chance to take probably Bautista would actually be my next guy.
Is there a bigger gap from number 1 to number 2 at any position than Kershaw, factoring in health? So, because Tulowitzki would be an obvious answer, but
yeah.
Factoring in health, is there a bigger gap between number 1 and number 2 at any position?
You know, probably not if you're saying the concerns about Tulo's health narrow the gap there. Because just looking at dollar values, that's usually a good way to tell gaps. Those help me determine my tiers, actually. It's a $6 difference between Kershaw and the 2nd pitcher for me.
I've got a bigger gap between 1 and 2 at shortstop, so I'm going to, even health concerns aside, I'm going to say that the gap at shortstop for me is bigger.
Well, he was saying not to count shortstop, basically.
No. I was saying factoring in health. You can count shortstop.
Okay, fine. It's an $8 difference at shortstop, so a shortstop.
All right, then. So we're cool with Kershaw at 5 or 6, 6 overall. Price, number 12. Felix Hernandez, number 13. Cueto and Sale and Scherzer rounding out round 2. Any beef there?
No, not really. I mean,
no, that's the those are basically the pitchers who go through round 3, I think, are all the pitchers who should go through round 3.
If I had beef, it would be with Cueto. I do have him ranked behind those guys, but I undersell him every year. So,
I'll ask you this about Cueto. Because last year his strikeout rate was the best, it was a career high. He had 242 strikeouts and 243 and two-thirds, and his strikeout rate had never been higher than 7.6. Now, with that said, his ERA is always great. He's just a great pitcher. But, 2012 I took as an example, 19-9, 2.78 ERA, 170 Ks and 217 innings for Cueto. He was a top 10 pitcher. He was number 10 in points, number 9 in roto. So you think he's more like that, or do you think he'll be able to keep up that K rate to make him – he was number 1 in points and number 2 in roto last year.
Well, yeah, he's not going to be that. but I think he can be in that discussion among the other pitchers that you mentioned in the second round.
Well, Scott said that the first 3-round guys should all go in the first 3 rounds. So it's Kershaw, Price, Felix, Cueto, Sale, Scherzer, Kluber, Strasburg, Bumgarner, and Darvish.
Okay, well, maybe Darvish looks a little better in round 4 to me for the reasons I brought up earlier. His elbow wasn't quite right at the end of last season, and well, not only that, I mean, there's some concerns about his whip because the control isn't always there. So, to me, if there's durability concerns. I guess the whip doesn't come into play in a points league, but the durability concerns do, and I would rather wait to get him in round 4 if I could.
Would you say that the whip is counteracted though by the strikeout rate, because he is pretty elite?
Well, that's,
there.
That's what I was going to get at if we were talking about roto, which we're not. But
no. I chose the points league, but you can certainly talk about him in roto.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up from the opposite perspective though, in that. Okay, yeah, he's probably the best strikeout guy of anybody, but then he has this high-ish whip relative to other aces. And the point I was going to bring in is, but if you can't count on him for 200-plus innings, that kind of cancels out the advantage in the strikeouts. So then it's just a normal strikeout ace with a high-ish whip, potentially. I mean, 2 years ago the whip was low, but, you know, that's... We still have very little to go on with Darvish, so I have concerns about the whip.
I don't know what the whip was, but it's worth noting that in his first 15 starts last year, Darvish had a 2.42 ERA. In his last 7 starts, he had a 4.73 ERA, and then he was shut down with the elbow issue. So I'm wondering if those 7 starts were influenced by his elbow, and I would guess that his whip was elevated by those 7 starts. So it's possible that he could have put together 2 straight years of a good, you know, ace-like whip.
Yeah, it's possible.
The man. I wish I had something more concrete there.
Right. And we're talking again about rounds 1 through 4. So, I mean, there's only so much bad you can say about a guy you're willing to take in round 4.
Well, let's go to round 4 then of this points draft. Adam Wainwright, Cole Hamels, and then Samardzija, Lester, Zimmerman, Teran, Greinke, and Cliff Lee in round 5. We got Samardzija and Wainwright and Hamels in round 4. So you guys okay with that?
I'm okay with Hamels there, even though he's ahead of some guys I have ranked ahead of him. But I think it's pretty bunchy at that point. And I'm not as worried about the wins with Hamels. He could get traded. He could have one of those Felix Hernandez seasons where he wins in spite of his team's lineup. But Wainwright, like I said, I'm very nervous about taking him that early. I don't think I will.
You know what I didn't realize? I had forgotten. Wainwright, last 4 starts of the regular season, 4-0 with a .55 ERA, 33 innings, 23 hits, and 4 walks, 26 strikeouts. So he was great, but then he was bad in the playoffs.
Right. But, you know, you're talking about a 4-start blip in between a 9-start stretch after the All-Star, right after the All-Star break, and then the playoffs, like you were talking about, and him complaining. Maybe he wasn't really complaining, but there being reports the whole time about his elbow not being hot. not being in good shape. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of concern there.
So where's Wainwright? More like a round five guy? Where's Samardzija, Lester, Jordan Zimmermann, Taran, and Greinke and Lee are going? I'm sure you don't like the Lee pick. Or like a round six guy?
You know, I've never been faced with, okay, Wainwright is still on the board, and, you know, I all these players who I have ranked behind him are off. Should I take him now? That's never happened before. Somebody's always taken Wainwright before I even came close to that point. I would think round six, if he was still out there, I would have to just cross my fingers and go for it.
Matt Harvey or Adam Wainwright?
Wainwright.
I need to adjust my ranking because I'm taking Harvey there for sure.
Okay. So let's talk about that round five group. Samardzija, Lester, Zimmermann, Taran, Greinke, and Cliff Lee. And what do you think?
Yeah, I don't. These are all guys that or most of them, kind of scare me a bit. Lee, especially, which you foresaw that.
Lee was the only one I was going to say scared me.
Who else scares you, Al?
Oh, yeah, I talked about Greinke. I don't have the confidence that he's going to have the walk or the strikeout rate this year that he had last year. Last couple of seasons, he's allowed a lot of line drives and therefore a lot of hits. And that's something that can reverse itself just because of chance. But in back-to-back years, it worries me a little bit with Greinke. So he certainly does worry me. And I've got Taran a little bit lower as well. I wouldn't say he scares me, but I just see some other pitchers that I like similarly, if not more.
What don't you like about Taran? Is it the wins or the strikeouts?
It's partly the wins, partly the fly ball tendencies. Not a big swing and miss guy last year. So, again, it's not that I dislike him. It's just I think I'm pretty sure I've got Harvey ahead of him. Okay. I know I've got Arrieta ahead of him. So it's just a matter of just a few pitchers that I would rather have.
And where would you guys feel comfortable drafting Cliff Lee?
Oh, man. Well, I have him ranked at a point that I think he'd go much later than this. I have him ranked 24th, so that's after Sonny Gray, James Shields, Tyson Ross. Well, just before Tyson Ross. So, let's see where Tyson Ross, I know, went in round 7 in this draft. So that's probably about the point where I'd consider Lee. And to me, it would be a situation where round 7, if I'm still looking for a second starter at that point, it's not going to be Cliff Lee. I think I might skip over him and go to Tyson Ross or somebody like that. But if it was my third starter, okay, I take the chance on him bouncing back from the elbow issue that plagued him all of last year. Despite his age and supporting cast, I'll hope he bounces back.
So we'll stop here and look at round 6 and beyond tomorrow on Starting Pitchers Part 2, and round 6 is interesting. We talked about Arrieta, and Gray is a bust for Al, but Matt Harvey, how do we feel about him? Alex Wood went, he's RP eligible, but he's still a good pitcher. Alex Cobb, everybody loves. Eventually we'll get to Tanaka and plenty, plenty more. So, Al and Scott, thank you guys.
Well, thank you for being our host yet again.
Back to talking out of the computer.
Yeah.
Just being able to see you, Adam. I miss it. It's just not the same.
I'll come back next week, okay?
Really? Every other week you'll be down here?
That'd be a little much. Next month.
Yeah. Kind of defeats the purpose of moving.
Yeah, exactly. For Al Belkior and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Thanks for listening, everybody. Starting Pitchers Part 2 tomorrow.